What I'd like to do at this point is begin to focus on what we call the 10 steps to building any kind of success you want into your life. Remember we said self-esteem is I am lovable and capable? ILAC? So we've been focusing a lot on the lovable part, learning to say loving thoughts to ourselves and think positively, use affirmations like I am lovable and capable, and no matter what you say or do to me, I'm still a worthwhile person. We focused on loving our emotions, loving our body, trusting our intuition. Now I want to look at the capable side of ILAC. How can we become more capable? How can we become more successful? And these steps that I'm going to teach you apply to every area of your life. They can create business successes, personal successes, social, emotional, spiritual, humanitarian, global, political, doesn't matter, any area of your life. Now, step one is called acknowledge and complete the past. And there are three areas we need to look at with this. The first one is psychological completion. The second one is healing the negative past. And the third one is acknowledging the positive past. So let's start by looking at psychological completion. In order to understand this, you need to know that everything in life, if you want to have completion, has to go through a cycle. And the cycles are choosing to do something, starting to do it, continuing to do it, finishing it, and then acknowledging that it's done. And you can get screwed up on any one of those steps. You can never choose. Like I meet people that they can't decide what to do with their life. They're 45 years old and they're still trying to figure out what they want to be when they grow up. It's as if they're waiting for 12 doves to fly over their house in the sign of a cross. You know, at the moment they have the right idea so they'll know this is ordained and this is the right thing to do. But usually it's not like that. You just have to pick. And once you pick, you got to start. So a lot of people choose things and plan them, but they never do them. Or they start, but they don't continue. Or they continue, but they never finish. Or some people finish and they never say, I did it. It's done. It's over. Completed. Now the problem is when you don't complete things, either with people or projects, a book you're writing, expressing your emotions, whatever it is, you end up with what we call attention units that aren't available. Now what do we mean by that? You only have so many units available in your brain, if you will, this is kind of a metaphor, for attention, to attend to a task. And if I've got something hanging out with Anita called Someday We'll Play Tennis, but we've never played tennis, and I told Jim I'd return his tennis racket, but I still have it, and every time I walk past it, I see that, and I told Ann that someday we'll have to finish that article we started, and I tell someone else that, you know, someday we'll come over and we'll have a picnic, and I haven't done any of these things. And then I've got a basement full of incompletes, the toaster that I never fixed and the clothes that don't fit that I was going to give to the Salvation Army. Well, all these things that I haven't completed are taking my attention. They're like little hooks in my brain. They've all got things hanging on them. I can't take those hooks and attach them to some new project. So what I want to do is clean up those past incompletes so that when I come to a new task, whether it's to work or a relationship, I've got all of me available or as much of me as possible. So let's look at some of the kind of things that you need to do to have psychological completion. I'm going to give you some homework to do as soon as you finish listening to this tape or after this seminar. I want you to write these down if you're in a place where you can do that. The first thing I want you to do is anything at all in your life that's broken, broken toaster, broken watch, broken earrings, broken plate, anything that's in the basement, in a drawer, in your closet that doesn't work, either fix it or give it away or throw it away. Because every time you see that, it takes up energy. See, it's incomplete. It takes up space in your house, in your apartment, in your car. So anything that's broken, fix it or throw it away. Give it to the Salvation Army, but get it out of your space. Number two, any clothes that you haven't worn in the last 2 years, with the exception of things like tuxedos and ball gowns that you may only wear once every 3 or 4 years. Again, throw it away or give it away. Another thing is to balance your checkbook. Oh, no, please, Mr. Bill. Balance your checkbook. File the papers. I remember at one point when I started getting into this, I had 6 banker's boxes full of unfiled stuff. That was my to-file box, right? Some of the boxes were 3 and 4 years old. I had never gone into them. I didn't even know what was in there, but darned if I wasn't sure, someday I might need it, right? It's called either forget it and let it go, or file it so that it's available and out of that state of, like, incompletion. Another one is clean out your office, your drawers, your files, your basement, your garage, your attic. Either pitch the stuff, have a tag sale, garage sale, yard sale. Get rid of it. I remember once I had a credenza behind my desk, and there were all the magazines I hadn't read from 1976, and then all the magazines from 77 and 78 and 79. And what I realized was all of my incompletions in my life come out of a low self-esteem position. I don't throw the magazines away because I think there's something in there that if I knew, I would be more. And that somehow I'm not enough, and if I knew that, then I'd be enough. You know? I went to one man's office once as a consultant. Come into the office. I still can't believe this. I walk into the office. There was literally nowhere to sit except one little chair and another little chair and everything else. Piles. Bills, invoices, bills of lading, journals, unanswered correspondence. The desk was piled up. There were piles of things on the floor. It was amazing. And I said, this is really a mess. How can you work in here? He says, well, not very well. He says, but this isn't really my office. And I said, well, where's your office? He said, well, my office is so bad, I can't even go in there anymore. He had literally collected 4 years of stuff that never got filed away. Then trying to concentrate in that kind of environment is impossible. See, and we say when you sit down, you should have a clean desk. And when you look around, there's nothing else there. So if you've got stuff that you want to remember, put it in a file folder called urgent, stick that to the side, and then go through it later. So that you have clarity. Another one is your car. I've been in some people's cars, and the back seat is like an archaeological dig. You can tell when they were at the beach because that was the week between the two Time magazines where their wet bathing suit is, see? And then on top of that, there was a layer of newspaper from March 1st, and on top of that, there was pizza, so I know they had pizza somewhere between March 1st and March 3rd where the next newspaper was. And then there's toys and dog bones and empty beer cans, and it's amazing. When you get into a car like that, what do you think that car is yelling back to you about your self-esteem? See, if you rented a limousine from the limousine service here in Chicago, and they showed up with a car like that, you wouldn't feel like they were doing their job. See, limousines are clean, and it's nice, and it smells good, and the seats are either polished leather or nice vacuum velour, whatever it is. And so we expect that, but we don't give that to ourselves. A friend of mine once said, you train other people how to treat you by how you treat yourself. See, my friend Martin Root treats himself like a first-class act. He always stays in the best hotel room, buys the best food, and Martin's not particularly wealthy. He may not have a lot of suits, but the few suits he has are $800 wool suits, tailor-made. We go out to dinner, he only wants to go where there's really good food. It's going to be healthy, nutritious, well-prepared, well-presented. So when Martin comes to visit me, guess what? I clean up the house. I make sure if he's staying in our guest room that everything is clean, because I know Martin expects that, because that's the way he treats himself. Whereas I've got other friends who show up, you know, in old blue jeans with holes in them and t-shirts that don't look like they've been washed for a couple weeks, and they say they're coming over. No problem. Come on over. Don't need to clean up for them. Now, I'm not saying that cleanliness versus uncleanliness or being an anal compulsive retentive type versus, you know, being free and loose. I'm just talking about a level at which your environment supports you rather than pulls energy away from you. Let me share with you a little technique in terms of paper. The average American these days handles about 600 pounds of paper a year. Now, those of us that work in organizations and corporations handle probably another couple tons. But anyway, I got this mail, it comes in all the time, things that people want me to do, brochures and so forth, and I start piling them up, and pretty soon I have this big mess again. So I learned something called the three-basket system. And it works like this. I want to recommend this to everybody, whether you're in business or just in your home. You get three stack baskets, three little stack trays. And one says in, the other says pending, the other says out. Now, so far, that's not so new. What's new is using it. Everything that comes into your space, whether it's your home, like, you know, mail or junk or books, whatever, goes in the in basket. And then what you do is once a day, you go through your in-basket, and you keep going through it until everything is out of your in-basket. Your in-basket must be empty before the end of the day. It's a rule. Don't go to bed if you have to stay up till 1 in the morning. In-basket gets emptied out. Then everything that comes out of the in-basket has the following rules attached to it. If it can be done in 10 minutes, you do it now. If it's a phone call, make the call. If it's to answer the memo, answer the memo. If it's a request for information, write it back on that memo, send it back out in the out-basket. If it requires you to get up and walk across the hall, do it now. Don't say, oh, I'll do all my hall stuff later. See, you take each one. If it's to Xerox something, go Xerox it, come back, stick it in an envelope, it's handled. And you just go down through the pile one thing at a time. What do most people do? They take everything out of the box. Well, this is the important stuff, this is the junky stuff, this is the whatever. Then they take the middle stuff and the junky stuff and they set it aside and they work on the important stuff. And after a couple months, you have 8 feet of middle and junky stuff that's never been handled. So if it can be handled within 10 minutes, do it now. If it takes more than 10 minutes to do it, then you make one of the following three decisions. And you can make this decision about the 10-minute stuff, too. You either do it, delegate it, or dump it. It's what we call the three Ds. So you do it, you delegate it to someone else. You say, look, I don't have to do this. My secretary can handle this. I don't need to do this. I could probably get my older son to do this. I don't need to do this. I can ship this off to the marketing department. Let them handle it. Write a little note, stick it in your outbox. Dump it means, this would be a good thing to do, but I don't have time. It's not a high priority. Trash can it. What most people do is they say, well, maybe someday. And then pretty soon you got your whole life with piled up with maybe some days. If it's something you're going to do, but it takes 3 hours to do, like, you know, write that report or gather some data that you have to go to the library for, you know, and drive halfway across town, then what you do, anything like that, you put it in the pending files. And you never have more than 6 pending files. And let me explain that. In a business or in your life, you should only have 6 functions. More than that, and you're doing too much. You'll get overloaded and you'll never succeed. You'll be burned out. I'll give you an example of what mine are. I have a file that says seminars and speeches. So if one of the pieces is a little story I want to learn to tell in my speech, it goes in my seminar and speeches file. Another one says books and tapes. So if I think, gee, I'm going to write that, I'm going to use that for my next tape album, goes in my books and tapes file. Marketing. Here's an idea of how to sell more. Here's a place I could get a speaking job. Then I have one that says company improvement. I'm the president of the company. So here's something I can do in terms of investing our income better. Anything related to that goes in there. Then finally, I have a thing called personal, like send Oren a birthday card. That's my son. Write a thank you note to your mom, that kind of stuff. Cash a check. Pick up groceries on the way home. Now, what I then do is after I finish going through my inbox and everything is out of that, it's either now in the outbox, it's in a trash can, or it's in my pending file, right? Then I take and I say, of all the things I could do right now, what area of my life do I want to work on? Well, I say marketing. So now I pull out my marketing file. And I go through my file and I order every piece of paper in there from top to bottom, from what's most important to be done to what's least important to be done. What do I do now? I take that file and I put it away and I only take that one piece of paper out. Now that's what I work on until I'm done. I handle it and then I take out that file, I take the next piece of paper out. When you're putting stuff in your pending files, you always write on that piece of paper, what's the next action step that you can take that will move that forward? Now as soon as I've written down what's the next thing, see, I can put it in my pending file. So when I take out my piece of paper from my pending file, guess what? I know exactly what I need to do. I don't need there to think about it. I don't have to waste time with it. I know exactly the next thing to do. See, and life moves forward simply by doing one thing at a time. And usually what happens, we look at a project, there's so many things to do, what do? We get overwhelmed and we don't do any of them. You can only do one thing at a time. See, and then my life starts to be orderly. And I get completion. What I have is 12 folders that say January, February, March, April, etc. And if I don't think I'm going to get to this until August, I don't want it in my file bothering me every day until August shows up. Someone once said, success by the inch is a cinch, by the yard it's hard. If you break down these big tasks into little tiny steps and do them, you can make some real progress in your life. Let's look at another area of incompletion. It's called broken agreements. How many of you have made agreements with people in your life that you still haven't kept? Anyone out there? Most of the hands up. Every broken agreement is an incompletion. Well, it blocks your energy, and it blocks the relationship, cuts off the trust that you have with that person, and undermines your self-esteem because you don't feel like a person of integrity. So what you need to do where you have a broken agreement is, first of all, there are three steps. The first one is acknowledge that you have a broken agreement. The second step is to apologize. And the third step is to either recreate the agreement, complete it, or renegotiate and tell the person you don't intend to complete it, so now you don't have an incomplete anymore, because I've said I'm not going to do it, you know it, I know it, that's it. So I would suggest to make a list of everyone you have a broken agreement with and then write them or call them and clean it up. You'd be surprised how good you feel about yourself, how free you'll feel, and you'll have all those attention units available. Another one is any acknowledgments that you haven't given to people. Like, I haven't acknowledged my secretary for the great job she's been doing the last month, new person on the job. Or I haven't acknowledged my son for bringing his grade point average up from C to B+. Everyone that's contributed to me and that I haven't acknowledged them for it usually isn't incomplete. When they see me, they're kind of waiting. Do you ever do something for your boss and then they never acknowledge what a good job he did? And every time you see him, you're kind of wondering, is today the day they're going to mention it? Right? Should I mention it? Should I hint around about it? How come they don't notice these things? So acknowledgement is a big incompletion. I have a friend, Dave Tanzi, who's a professional speaker and an educator, used to be a superintendent of schools, and he tells a story about when he was at UCLA as an undergraduate, he wanted to go out for basketball because he wanted to meet John Wooden, who was one of the great basketball coaches of all time at UCLA. And Dave was not a great basketball player, but he went out along with 200 other kids, and a team gets whittled down to about, 30, 40 players. And what happened was, at the end of the tryouts, Wooden would get the kids in groups of five, and they'd be sitting around all across the gym, and he would go over to each kid with his clipboard, and he would tell the kid what he saw his strengths are, what he saw his weaknesses were, and then he would give him some advice, like, basketball isn't for you, but don't give up, try some other sports, or, if you come back next year and you work all summer in a basketball league, I think you could make the team. You need to work on your dribbling, you need to work on your foul shooting. 200 kids, he had notes like that, kids that he'd probably never see again in his life. And Dave was one of the guys that got cut, but as he told him, as he was cutting him, he said, look, I can really tell you love to play sports. You are really into basketball. You have so much fire and get up and go and competitive spirit, and you're willing to really go for it, and you got guts. He says, make sure you find a sport. There are 180 different teams on UCLA, athletic teams, varsity teams. Find one, because we deserve to have you playing for our university. Well, this blew him away. Here he was getting cut, and he said he walked away from it feeling like I was esteemed. And he said, I realized about 20 years later that I'd never thanked John Wooden. He did get a varsity letter, I think it was in wrestling or track or something like that, and when they had the varsity letter day, Wooden came up to him 3 years after this basketball event, never seen the kid since then, and said, I'm glad you found another sport, good for you. Remembered him 3 years later. And this built his self-esteem like you couldn't believe. And he said he wrote a letter to John Wooden, 3 pages, thanking him, telling him that he enjoyed him as a basketball coach and how he loved UCLA. But most importantly, he remembered these events and what a meaningful difference it had made in his life. 2 weeks later, he gets a letter from John Wooden saying, your letter came at the most incredible time. I was feeling down. I wasn't feeling very good about myself. And when I got your letter, it meant so much to me. Thank you. And he wrote him a 2-page letter about what was going on in his life and what it was like to be a coach and on. That's the power of acknowledgement. So make sure you reach out and acknowledge the people in your life. Okay, let's look at the second area of incompletions called healing the negative past. Healing the negative past. I've mostly shared with you how to do that already. The total truth process, where you share your anger, your hurt, your fear, and your regrets, and your I wants, and the I love you and appreciation stage. Anything where you have emotional hurt from the past, there's always a person involved. Sometimes it may be even with God. You're angry at God. So then do the total truth with God. Do it with yourself, whatever's there. But use that process. And if there's guilt and resentment from the past, use what we talked about earlier. Change your belief or change your action. Let it go. Otherwise, you're dragging an anchor around. Any of you had that feeling where you're driving a car and you look down and the emergency brake's on? Any of you ever done that? How many of you, when you do that, instead of letting the emergency brake go, just push harder on the gas? That's crazy. We wouldn't do that, would we? What do? You release the brake. And so all this emotional baggage that we're carrying around from the past is like dragging an anchor. And we need to let it go. We need to forgive and forget and heal. Give yourself permission to be in therapy, to go to counseling, to be in groups, to use 12-step programs, whatever it takes to let go of that emotional baggage. In America right now, the term that's very popular is we're all in denial. We deny that we have pain. We deny, who, me? No problem. What are these anchors I've been dragging around? Oh, I've been dragging around them for years. No problem. I can handle it. I'm tough. Well, I'm macho. I can take it. Well, there's a point at which you break. So make sure you heal and let go. The next stage is what we call acknowledge the positive past. And this is what I want to focus on mostly here now. Acknowledging the positive past. There's some very powerful techniques. The first one is called the daily review. Each day, before you go to sleep, you can be lying in bed, sitting in a chair, close your eyes and review the day. Now, how to do that? Ask your unconscious to bring up memories and pictures of things in the day that you can feel proud about, successes. Maybe you're on a diet and you cheat a little bit, but you didn't cheat all the way. You got up, you went to work, you made that scary phone call, you asked for a raise when it was difficult, you helped out a friend, you went to the gym, you worked out, you spent time with your children, quality time. I don't know if you know this, but in America, the average parent only spends between 12 and a half and 14 and a half minutes per day interacting with each of their children. And that between 8.5 and 12 and a half of those minutes are spent arguing about bedtime, eating habits, haircuts, dress codes, all that kind of stuff. Leaves between 2 and 6 minutes a day for the development of values, self-esteem, sharing love, listening, talking about feelings. So we need to spend time reviewing the day, and when we've done stuff with our kids, give yourself acknowledgement for that. Spend 20 minutes with your kid, you're way above the American average. Okay. Now what happens when you're doing this daily review? You'll start to see things, all kinds of stuff that you never would have normally congratulated yourself for. Another way you can use the daily review is to ask yourself, show me places in the day where I could improve. Oh yeah, the time I screamed at my secretary, the time I got angry at the traffic, time I yelled at my son. Don't feel guilty about that. See that as an improvement opportunity. Okay? Because what we want to do is build up that stack of poker chips we were talking about before, focusing on our successes and then focusing on possibilities of improvement. Another technique is called the mirror exercise. Now, this is different from the one I taught you earlier. Before you go to bed at night, stand in front of your mirror. Now, if you have a full-length mirror, that's great. If you've only got a little bathroom mirror, you know, up on the medicine cabinet, that's fine too. And you're going to talk to yourself. And you're going to say the following things. You're going to tell yourself what you appreciate, admire, and respect about you from the day. And at the end, you're going to say, I love you. Now, for some people, that's extremely uncomfortable. And what I would recommend, if you're living with someone, make sure you tell them you're doing this. The last thing you want them to do is walk into the bathroom and there you are talking to the mirror. You know, they'll send for the little people in the white coats to come get you. Let me give you an example of what it might sound like if I were doing it. Hi, Jack. You had a great day today. I'm really proud of you. You got up early in the morning, and even though you had a full day ahead of you, you got up and you got some exercise, and then you did some stretching, and you meditated for 15 minutes. You ate a really balanced, healthy breakfast, and you came down, and you worked with a group all day, and you were really present with them, and you did a good job. You articulated yourself better than you usually do. You said less gonna's, and you said more going to's. I was proud of you for that. And then you got together with some other people, and you went out for dinner, and you ate well, you stayed on your diet. And when you came home, you called your children, and you talked to them, which I'm really proud of you for that, because that's important in our life. And one more thing I want to tell you. I really love you. And then you hold eye contact with yourself. And that's really hard for a lot of people. They want to go, I really love you. And then they kind of look away. Or I really love you. And then they kind of run as fast as they can, because they don't want to look. Really get to know that person in the mirror. Make eye contact. Go deep into those eyes. First time I did this exercise, I was in a group and I was asked to do it for 3 months and not to miss a day. So I did it for 3 months. And about 2 months into it, a really weird thing happened. I'm talking in the mirror and all of a sudden I said, I love you. And I had this weird feeling come over me, like my skin got all tingly and I felt warm and my stomach felt hollow. And the feeling was kind of like what I felt when I got a crush on Judy Graham back in high school. Or when I first met my wife, Georgia, and our eyes met. And it was like love at first sight. And I thought, my God, I've gone too far. You know? I said, I think I have a crush on myself. You know, this is bad news.
Oh, good news.
So I went to my wife, Georgia, who I mentioned as a counselor, and I said, Georgia, I think I've blown it. You know, I think I've done this thing too far. I have this crush on my man. I'm getting into narcissism or something. And she said, Jack, don't worry about it. She said, that's what you're supposed to feel. It's okay to love yourself that much. This was a totally new experience, you know, because I was brought up, you didn't love yourself. You know, that was bad. So don't be surprised if when you're doing this you cry, if you shake, if you feel nauseous, if you feel silly or giddy, all those kind of things can show up for you. One person told me they started doing this and all of a sudden they stopped and the person in the mirror, I mean, it was their own voice, said, well, it's about time you told me something nice. So give yourself that possibility.